Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts. And today it is my pleasure to have as my guest, Tania Gonzalez-Ortega. Tania is an artist, visionary, energy healer, and educator with over two decades of experience in energy healing. Since 2000, she has dedicated herself to studying and practicing various forms of energy healing. Tania's journey has led her to learn directly from spiritual masters and healers in India and the United States, immersing herself in teachings on non-duality for many years. Tania's journey as a healer began with a profound healing crisis during a Kundalini awakening, leading to a miraculous healing through an encounter with Christ. This awakening uncovered her spiritual gifts, including astral travel, clairvoyance, clairaudience, and light language. In her one-on-one sessions, Tania harnesses these gifts to connect with realms beyond, tapping into potent healing energies that she shares generously. Whether it's for individuals, families, or businesses, Tania's sessions activate your own healing potential within your crystalline light body, facilitating deep transformation at the soul level. Clients often emerge from sessions with Tania feeling a newfound sense of peace, deepened connection with self, and relief from long-standing symptoms. Many also report improved relationships and increased abundance in their lives. Tania, welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast. It's a pleasure having you on the show today.
Thank you so much, Dave, for having me. I'm really happy to be here and connect with you and your audience.
And my audience is going to be grateful to have connected with you, once they hear what you have to offer to them. So we met through a podcast guest and podcaster forum. You reached out to me. I had posted something about the podcast on that forum. You reached out to me, expressing interest in being considered to be a guest on the podcast. We had a very nice chat. I remember this.
Yep.
We had a great conversation. And we made a really great connection. One thing led to another, and here we are.
I remember it clearly.
Yeah, it was a great conversation, and I'm just excited about getting into what you do, asking you some questions, and having our listeners and viewers get to know you better. So with that, my first question for you is, please tell our listeners about the experiences that have shaped your life path and your life passions.
Okay. So I'll try to be succinct. I'm born as a bicultural person. My father's Mexican, my mother's American. And so at a very young age, I didn't quite fit the box that society was saying I should fit into. And so already I kind of had this awareness of being outside of the box. I didn't really ever quite fit in. And so I think it always kind of set me apart a little bit. I think it kind of made me look into more of like, what's really going on here? Why do people think this way or that way? Fast forward to my college years, I was an art major. And through my art practice that I started to question the nature of the mind. Because I started to ask the question of like, okay, well, if I'm an artist and I'm creating something, where is this coming from? So naturally, I started to question, who am I? And I began to observe the mind and saw that it had no beginning and no end to it. And so then I started to be drawn to teachers like Alan Watts and reading books on religion and Zen and spirituality, and it all was pointing to this one great mystery. And I started to practice meditation just on my own. And I started to have glimpses of a different state of being. I started to have a glimpse of this no mind, like no thought state. And it was so peaceful. It was just a split second. That's the thing. You experience it for a split second and you feel this expansiveness and this deep peace. And then, of course, the mind comes in immediately and it's like, oh, wait, what was that? I want more of that. And then the mind's going again. I know lots of people have experienced that. Anyway, it was actually suggested to me that I start doing yoga as a practice. I was also dealing with a little bit of depression, actually. And so I said, okay, sure, I'll go do some yoga. Didn't know anything about it. And my body started to respond incredibly quickly to just opening up and being really flexible, whereas before I wasn't. And I was like, wow, what is this? I decided to go through a yoga teacher training. I was teaching Waldorf education at the time. That was kind of also part of my, when you were saying what were the things that formed me the most, was just kind of graduating from college and looking at the world and just seeing how much suffering there was. And I was just like, you know, if we're really going to make a difference, we have to start with the children. And so I ended up in education, but then Waldorf found me. I knew nothing about Waldorf education. So once again, here I was outside of the mainstream box. I was like, the school hired me. I knew nothing about it. It was a Waldorf parent cooperative in Berkeley. And so I just dove into teaching a fifth and sixth grade class. I decided to go to this yoga teacher training because I was like, what is this yoga stuff? And did this training and had a very profound experience. I got a mantra. And I did as they told me, like, okay, focus on your third eye, repeat the mantra with devotion, and kind of that's that, you know, breathe, be still. But I had a very strong yearning towards this enlightenment stuff. You know, it's like when I heard about enlightenment, I was like, oh, I want that. Because I kind of had, and maybe a lot of people encounter this in their younger years of just kind of feeling like, really, this is all there is to the world? It's kind of depressing, you know, it's sort of existential angst. And so yeah, I had this experience, and what it felt like was I saw this golden light start to fill up my body, seeing it from the inside, and I felt my body getting lighter and lighter, like I was lifting off the ground, like just getting higher and higher. That was the sensation, like starting to float off. And I was like, in my mind, I remember thinking, this is it. I'm going to enlighten. Like, this is it. I'm on my way to enlightenment, because it just felt really amazing. But then I hit this, like, I don't know what it was, but it was just like a boom, this wall and this growl. It was a lion's roar that came from in. I could hear it inside of me. It was loud, this roar, you know? And I was like, oh no. Oh God, what was, like, crap. I was terrified because I was just like, what was that? No idea. I just shut down the meditation. I was like, okay, don't go there. I don't know what just happened. And for whatever reason, I don't know why, but I never brought it up to any of the teachers. I never went to them, hey, I experienced this in my meditation. Do you have any idea what happened? I just kept it to myself. I'm not sure why, but I did. And then subsequently, that's when I kind of went through my healing crisis. So it was after that, shortly after that, I would say a week later, all these crazy physical symptoms. I had always been healthy, and suddenly I was losing all this weight. I lost my menstrual cycle. My hair was falling out. I was having, at night, it would feel like I was getting electrocuted. And I was also just having these experiences in the astral realms, like just leaving my body and being in other dimensions. And it was terrifying, actually. So it was not fun. Some people have Kundalini awakenings and it's blissful. You know, they have this one oneness and whatever. But for me, it was just a dark night of the soul. And because I didn't know what was happening, I had no context. Even, and I was living at the ashram at the time, even the Swami that was there wasn't recognizing what was happening to me. So I just knew that I felt like my physical body was falling apart. That's what it felt like. they didn't know. They weren't supportive. And so I really had no choice but then to leave and go back home because I was very physically ill. And my poor mother didn't understand what was going on. I mean, I was having panic attacks, severely depressed, anxiety out the roof, and nothing helped. Nothing helped. You know, the yoga wasn't helping. The meditation wasn't helping. Doctors couldn't figure out. I mean, doctors are like, there's nothing wrong with you. So yeah, I ended up in the psychiatric hospital for a couple of nights. And at that point, of course, all they wanted to do was give me some drugs. And the best way that I can explain it, in spite of the fact that I didn't understand what had happened to me, I had already had a knowing that I knew too much, that taking a pill was not going to fix this, you know? Like, I already knew too much. I mean, I had studied so much of the yoga scriptures and had an understanding of the soul and that we're more than just these physical vessels. And so anyway, I mean, I was just kind of out on a limb really for a couple of years and wouldn't have wished it on anybody. Fast forward 2 years, it all culminated to this one pivotal moment after me searching for answers, like, what can I do? Do I need to go on a cleansing diet? Do I need to exercise? Do I need to keep practicing meditation? Maybe this is just part of it. The only thing that kind of kept me sort of tethered to this world in the sense of like, okay, there has to be a way through this, is I came across the writings of St. John of the Cross, who wrote about the dark night of the soul. So I read his writing, and he talks about this first dark night of the soul as a purification process. And that basically in this purification process, where what a person finds is that suddenly all the things that used to work don't work anymore. Mm-hmm. Prayer doesn't work. Meditation doesn't work. And it's basically that what he says in a nutshell is it's really up to God as far as when you're done. So there wasn't like, oh, I just have to follow A, B, and C and I'll get to D. Or it's a certain timeline or whatever. It was just like, and it's just up to God when you're done with this process. My aunt and uncle met this couple in Pagosa Springs who were devotees of Christ. And they happened to be in the neighborhood and saw that he made these wood blasted signs. His wife was an artist. And they just shared their story, my story with Peter and Rebecca. This was the older couple in their 70s at the time. And so Peter, he just had a heart for me. He had struggled with, he was labeled as schizophrenic and had basically wrestled with that and got through that on his own outside of the medical system. So I had a phone conversation with Peter and I felt curiosity around what's Peter talking about? Who is Jesus? I mean, we all know Jesus, but I didn't know Jesus. I just had no connection. I didn't go to church. My family was not religious. And if anything, I was more repelled by the idea of being involved with church or Christianity in general. Mm-hmm. But I remember just being in such a place of desperation, really, that I felt somehow I just felt like, okay, this person has dealt with quote unquote mental illness. So he must know something. Because that's how I felt. I felt like I was crazy. And then I decided, okay, I'm going to buy a plane ticket and I'm going to go visit this man and his wife. And before making the journey, I distinctly remember speaking to God. Just from my mind, I just said, okay, God, this is the last person I'm going to seek help from. And if this doesn't work, I'm all yours. If that means I'm crazy and homeless on the streets or whatever, I surrender my life to you completely. Like, I'm done. I'm done seeking. So I said that, and I got on the plane. I arrived there. Certain things happened. There was praying and this and that. I didn't understand any of it, but something happened. Something broke. And it was that time there that I laughed for the first time in 2 years. I laughed there was something, Peter was doing something ridiculous and silly. Laughing. Like, what am I doing here? This is insane, you know? I just started laughing and they were, a couple of people showed up that were friends of Peter's and they were praying in tongues over me. And I'm like, what is this praying in tongues stuff? This is wild, you know? Anyway, so I was only there for a couple nights. And I remember asking Peter, I said, I don't know what happened here. I don't know what I'm supposed to do with this. He says, well, it's up to you and Jesus. I'm like, okay, fair enough. And I flew home. And that night, I had this dream. It was one of those waking dreams. It wasn't your regular sort of dream. And in that dream, I had this feeling of my soul coming back to my body. And I heard a female voice ask me if I was okay. I don't know who the voice was to this day. Maybe it was an angel. Maybe it was God. Maybe God's a female. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It was a voice. And I said, I'm okay. I'm a little beat up, but I'm still here. And I woke up the next morning and all of my symptoms were gone. All of the depression, all of the anxiety, everything. Like I came back to life. I felt so alive. It was unbelievable. Like I was just blown away. And of course, extremely grateful. I mean, I just, and so what I learned, so when you ask, okay, how did this shape me? It was something I needed to learn because up until that point, as a kid, as a child, I just had this conditioning that I learned at a young age that in my mind, I had formulated that in order to receive love, that I had to perform. Like I had to be good at everything. I had to be the good student. I had to play the violin well. I had to be a good artist. I had to please others, you know, that I had to earn love. Mm-hmm. And when I realized that that didn't work anymore, because my talents at that point didn't serve me when I was going through that dark night, who cares if I can paint well? You know, like it didn't. It wasn't, I was unfulfilled. I was empty, you know? And at that time, for whatever reason, I had developed in the ashram this belief like, oh, I have to earn God's grace. So that's why I was doing all this stuff, the karma yoga, you know, that's kind of what they teach. Like, oh, you have to serve God in order to receive his blessings. And what I learned in that experience is that actually you don't have to do anything to receive God's love. Like, you are love. Love is all around. Mm-hmm. You're loved unconditionally. Doesn't matter who you are. And so it was a very humbling experience. And yeah. And so from there, I still had some physical issues that I had to deal with. I mean, it wasn't like I was instantly healed, but there were synchronicities that happened that just started me on the healing journey of continuing to peel the onion layers. I would say that was the biggest pivotal moment of my life, because at that point forward, you can't unsee what you've seen and what you've experienced. I really came to realize that there is definitely more to this world than meets the eye, and that energy is real. That's all we are. Energy healing was the thing that actually helped me with my symptoms moving forward, and just seeking alternative ways of healing, because talk therapy didn't help. Drugs didn't help.
That is quite the nonlinear journey, to say the least. First of all, I like outside of the box. I mean, I think that's an overused term, but I like individuals who are, you know, a friend of mine called them the outliers, you know, the ones that do things a little bit differently and defy conventional wisdom. But as I was listening to your story, one of the things that came into mind is that all the things that manifested for you up until the time that you got physically sick was almost like it was part of your soul plan, that these individuals, this specific non-traditional school is going to manifest. You were going to find art as a vehicle to kind of understand more of the inner workings of the mind. And what kind of art, by the way, was your mode of expression? Was it painting? Was it?
I would say I was more drawn to painting mostly, but I was at UCLA. They were very much pushing new genres and on the cutting edge. It was an excellent program, and I got exposed to all forms, ceramics, photography, painting, drawing, all of it. As I got into the more advanced classes, you really had to stop and think, like, why am I creating this thing? Why would I want to express this? As a kid, you think art's about painting a pretty picture, you know, learning how to draw accurately. And it's actually more than that. So that's how naturally they kind of pushed towards that, for you to dig deeper as to, like, why are you creating what you're creating? What's the point here?
And what's the message that you want to send with your art, either to yourself or to the world around you, or both? When you were going through the hair loss, the absence of menstrual cycle, and other, did you look back on that? Was it almost like your body was kind of transforming? It was kind of a transformative piece that you were going through. I was thinking, and this is going to sound like a weird analogy, it's like a snake transmuting, shedding out the old skin and making way for new experiences, shedding the skin that might have been associated with past negative experiences or trauma. And it was almost, to me, almost like a physical cleansing in a way. And that's what occurred to me. But I don't know if in retrospect you saw it that way or you saw it differently.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, in this culture, we don't have, if this was happening to me in India, if it had happened to me in India, there would have been resources. People would have been like, oh yeah, she's having a Kundalini awakening, send her to this Ayurvedic doctor. She needs to eat root vegetables and put oil on her body and maybe start eating meat again. Like, cause I was, you know, living in the ashram, they didn't allow for eating meat. And the Kundalini, when you're going through that kind of awakening, you kind of have to throw all the rules out the window. Mm-hmm. And whatever, you know, so it can mean sometimes that if you're a vegetarian and you go through a Kundalini awakening and it's like, your body needs meat, you know, you got to eat meat. So, or vice versa, or you have to stop eating meat, or you have to stop, you know, drinking coffee, or, you know, things mm-hmm. like this. So it was definitely, and I think for me too, I think the reason why it was so difficult is because I had shoved away. I mean, as a kid growing up, I just learned to stuff my emotions. All of my traumas were shoved into my body, and there really wasn't any, there was no more room to shove stuff into. And the Kundalini was just like bringing it all up to the surface. So I think part of the panic attacks and anxiety and the depression, it was like, wow, I'm having to feel all the things that I didn't allow myself to feel because I didn't feel safe to feel, that made it more challenging.
And I have a friend of mine who's a certified yoga instructor, and he invited me to a Kundalini yoga session that another yoga therapist or yoga master teacher was doing. And he explained to me, he goes, a lot of times, he goes, it's a very intense experience. And for individuals that have had either repressed emotional issues or there's been some trauma, a lot of times that can shake that loose or bring that to the surface, especially, it sounds like, for individuals who might be overly distanced from their emotions or have suppressed it, that just frees it. And, you know, a lot of times too, from my understanding, that freeing of emotions, though it's empowering, can also be stressful and may also lead to some type of physical issues as well too, that more that manifests.
Yeah, and it's not unusual for, I mean, I have, you know, just by happenstance, I met a woman online on Facebook. We connected. It was very randomly. And she was going through a Kundalini awakening at the time that I contacted her. She's an older woman. And for her, it was spontaneous. She wasn't even doing anything. I mean, she was a spiritual person already, but she was just laying on the couch. And suddenly this thing woke up inside of her. Her hair changed color and texture and, like, just a wild, crazy thing. So it's such a mysterious phenomenon thing. It just awakens on its own accord for whatever reason. I think, like you said, it was part of the plan, you know. Thank God I survived. I didn't think I was gonna make it, to be honest.
Well, it sounds like it was also part of the divine plan that you were gonna make it, and you were going to take what you learned from all of your experiences and use it to help other individuals, you know, find their true authentic self, you know, promote inner healing. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, I mean, to me, there was obviously a greater purpose for you going through what you went through and to help you find your true calling. And I, you know, sometimes too, though, I think the best spiritual work we do is the messiest, where we really get into the dark sides of ourselves, the shadow parts of ourselves that we keep hidden because society says, well, you got to be happy. It's the shadow work that we do that makes us the more genuine, I think, the more authentic, and I think leads to greater spiritual awareness.
Yeah, we have to accept that part of ourselves. You can't shove it away or, you know, try to sweep it under the rug. It's just part of being a human being, you know. We're not all just the light, it's the dark too. And our task is to find that middle way, you know, being able to embrace both sides. And it's about being in the body too, you know. I think it's about embodiment. The spiritual path isn't about escaping this reality. I think that's the mistake that when I came across the word enlightenment, I thought, oh, I want that. I don't want to have to suffer anymore. I don't want to feel pain. Eternal bliss sounds great, you know, but I think it's really embracing all the human experience, the anger, the sadness, the joy, the bliss. It's all constantly moving through us and in us and out of us. And you can't block out any of it because from what I have come to understand, when you go into thinking about God, okay, well, who is God? Well, for God, each one of us are an aspect of God choosing to have this human experience. God is wanting to experience itself in an infinite number of ways. So it's wanting to experience itself as Dave Roberts or as Tanya Gonzalez Ortega. It's our uniqueness. We're not meant to be perfect. We're meant to have our idiosyncrasies and our weaknesses, and it's through that that we can then experience love, right? You know, what is unconditional love? What would unconditional love be if you didn't have to love somebody that maybe made you angry or you didn't really like?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and as you're explaining too, why we shouldn't have to look to earn anybody's love. We're born with love. So we shouldn't have to earn something that we're already born with. But yet, a lot of times, and for many individuals I've worked with, particularly who have experienced the challenges with substance use, they grew up in unhealthy family situations where that love had to be earned. Like, you had to be the perfect child. You had to bring all of these accomplishments to the family altar. But I say altar, figuratively, not literally. And it's like you're doing all this stuff, and a lot of times that doesn't get noticed because the family's preoccupied with their own dysfunction. And a lot of times the accomplishments of the children are either ignored or sometimes children may also be scapegoated because the parents want to deflect attention from their own issues. A lot of times individuals will come out of those situations and they hear the message in the home that I'll love you if you do this. So they take that out into their adult relationships, thinking that love is conditional or love is transactional. And one of the things that I think as therapists, as coaches, as light workers that we need to do is help individuals dispel that narrative and come up with a narrative that reflects their true authenticity and the fact that they are inherently lovable human beings.
Absolutely. And I'm glad that you brought that up because it brings me to the family constellations work, because in family constellations, children, what has been discovered through years of family constellations work is that children have this, they call it crazy love, that they are willing to do anything for their parents' love, even giving themselves over sexually. They want to please. They want to love so much that they're willing to sacrifice themselves, even to take on a parent's illness or to fall ill, this kind of thing. And that's what I discovered, actually, my very first constellation that I ever received. I didn't know anything about family constellations work. It was through that session that I saw how much trauma was in my mother's lineage. I studied with an energy healer for about 17 years, and her name was Gia Combs Ramirez. And I remember her telling me, she said, Tanya, all of your health issues most of that isn't yours. And I didn't know what she meant by that. I'm like, what do you mean most of it isn't mine? I guess I had an idea of like, okay, yeah, maybe I'm an empath. I absorb other people's negative thoughts and emotions and so on and so forth. But what I came to see in the constellation was that I had inherited all this trauma from my mother's lineage. It was so profound. And what was most striking to me about it was in family constellations work, someone represents you, someone represents your mother, your father, your brother, your grandmother, etc. These people that are complete strangers come in and they take on these roles and they're working with what is called the knowing field. And what's so amazing is that complete strangers, when they start tapping into the knowing field, they start feeling these things that when they start expressing what they're feeling is unbelievably accurate. The things that they say, what they're feeling, how they're reacting to another person in the constellation is so accurate. And so I'm sitting there watching this constellation, fascinated. It wasn't impacting me emotionally. I was just like, wow, this is trippy. That was in my, you know, I was like watching it like a TV show or something. Oh, that's really, wow, this is wild. The thing that rocked my world is at the end of the constellation, the facilitator said, okay, now, Tanya, you're going to go in and you're going to dismiss your representative, have the person that was representing you sit down, and you're going to come in and you're going to stand in the constellation as yourself to receive what's here. So I step in to the position of where my representative was standing, and I'm facing my mother and the lineage of women where the trauma was, you know, generational trauma. The minute I stepped in, my whole body started to shake uncontrollably, and I just broke down sobbing in tears because I could feel like, oh my God, I can finally let this go. This is not mine to carry. So I'm not sure why so the crazy love of the children, right? That's most because, you know, as a child, I'm like, you know, I took it on out of love. And it's very unconscious. And so, you know, that love, you know, we have to come out of that crazy love or blind love even into mature love, into knowing like, okay, you know, I'm an adult now. I don't have to carry this. I have a choice. I don't have to carry this anymore. I can give this back. It's, yeah, powerful.
Well, I think you brought up a great point because, you know, we talk about intergenerational trauma, and we can carry the trauma of our family systems for, you know, 1 to 2 to 3 generations. And that history gets inextricably woven into our DNA. And if the rules or the narrative or that history is not changed, we're going to be a product of our history. And a lot of that is probably unknowingly, unconsciously, maybe automatically. And it sounds like the family constellation work that you did and that you do with others is empowering because it unburdens them thinking that they had any responsibility, but just unburdens them for beating themselves up over the choices that they made. Because when you factor in that family history piece that they were not previously aware of, that had to be a big factor in them engaging in the behaviors that they engaged in.
Yeah. It shines the light on it gives you a more expanded view of what's really happening. So we, as an individual, we have a limited perception. We grow up as children, we create a story for ourselves out of that experience, and it becomes our beliefs and it becomes our patterns. Yeah. You know, we think we have figured it out. My story, this is who I am. And then we find ourselves stuck. Why do I keep attracting the same partner? Why do I struggle with addiction? Why am I constantly depressed? Like, why am I dealing with chronic illness? Doesn't seem to go away. And I think that's why talk therapy can only help to an extent, because talk therapy is really just about you sharing your story and having, you know, just to be listened to can be an empowering experience, but it doesn't resolve the actual trauma. And so that's why in family constellations, we don't go into the story. We just ask for basic things like, who is your mother? Who is your father? What are you dealing with? What is the outcome that you want? Okay, let's see what the knowing field reveals. Mm-hmm. And so things just start showing up. And, you know, like in my case, there were two miscarried children that my mother had that I didn't even know. And that's why it was just, I think, so unbelievable to me that it was revealed by the knowing field. My mother was actually there at the session. So she was able to confirm that, yes, indeed, there were two miscarried children in this family. And I was like, wow, she never told me that. And it has an impact. So that's the thing. There's things that happen that we don't know. Maybe, you know, your father, you know, he was emotionally abusive because it's his mother was abused by her mother, whatever. And we don't see that. We don't know that. And so when we get this bigger picture, it's all about awareness. It's amazing what can collapse the minute you shine the light on something, just by observing it and seeing it and accepting for what it is. Okay, this happened. Oh, and so then there's a shift, even just accepting the truth, the intergenerational trauma. And it's something that it's in the subconscious.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the power of the work, that it helps to reveal what's there that we can't see.
That's right. At least if it's in the subconscious, it can be accessed just with some prompting. And particularly, I could say where the family constellation work would be extremely important and effective in helping individuals access information that's in their subconscious. The other thing that the family constellation work reminded me of was some specific family therapy techniques. I was thinking of like elements of psychodrama and family sculpting, where an individual who is the client ends up picking individuals who remind them of family members that they interacted with. They sculpt them in particular positions, and they begin to talk about their feelings and reactions. And so that family constellation piece sounded like, to me, it had some elements of family sculpting and some psychodrama with that. Do you debrief everybody as well after the experience? Do you have like a debriefing, or where you have everybody talk about the experience after?
Yeah, the person that receives the session, it's recommended that they leave because they need to keep their own experience for themselves and not be influenced by anything. You know, it's such a sacred, deep process. So that person, you know, leaves, and then there is a debriefing. And so people have a chance to share, like, yeah, wow, when I stepped in the role as the mother, it was relevant to me in my life because I have issues with my mother, and it's uncanny that it's the issues were very similar, and to experience being the mother just brought some greater awareness around my own relationship, for example. So yeah, definitely. The debriefing does help people process what that was like for them to be in those roles.
And I think family constellation and other similar hands-on experiential techniques really, I think, are so much more effective than talk therapy by itself, because of the fact that, you know, you're getting to see the dynamics play out almost in real time, and you get to react to that, and you get to develop some insights based on what you're reading from the interactions of other people. So, I mean, talk therapy is great to an extent, but I think in conjunction with other experiential therapies, it can become very effective.
Yeah, it's because it's using more than just one part of the brain. You know, you're dealing with addicts, you know, spatial dynamics, and the emotional part, you're tapping into your intuition. It's phenomenological. So it's in the moment, what's arising in the moment. It's accessing all these different parts of ourselves at once. And it's often said that in a single session, it's kind of like you can either take 10 years of therapy or have 3 or 4 family constellations. You know, it's kind of the way it's talked about.
I want to just kind of jump to a little bit about New Earth Consciousness and your business, your organization, your healing center, however you want to classify it, however, if I'm classifying it correctly. What is the mission of New Earth Consciousness? What inspired it? And I know you do family constellation services, but what other services do you provide? And what do you see as being the impact that those services have had on individuals that you've served?
Yeah. So when I think it was in 2012, and I was studying energy healing with Gia Combs Ramirez and realizing, okay, if I want to create a business, I need to come up with a name. And what is it that I do? And I decided to call it New Earth Consciousness. What Gia taught was that in 2012, there was a shift. Everybody talked about it, right? December 21st, 2012, end of the Mayan calendar. And we all thought, okay, we're all going to wake up and it's going to be a whole new reality. And that, of course, didn't feel like that happened, but she described it as, you know, a new, we all have this crystalline energy system now. This, like an, it's like, you know, you think of a computer and every so often you got to get a new operating system. It's kind of like we've got this new energetic operating system that we have. It's crystalline in nature. What I find really fascinating about that, because she was the only one that I knew of at the time that was actually talking about this crystalline energy. And she would reference Dr. Masaru Emoto and, you know, the hidden messages in water and things like that, that consciousness actually has an impact on water. And we're mostly water. And this water that exists in a gel state is inside of our tissues. It holds light, it holds information, et cetera. And over time, and just, you know, spending time on the internet, I started to see this word popping up, you know, this crystalline energy, or people were calling it diamond consciousness, I think is another term that I heard. I'm like, okay, there's something happening here. And she also mentioned that, you know, from 1980s onward is when the crystalline children were being born, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. And I would have to say that as an educator, teaching young children, I was like, yeah, these children are different. They are so much more awake and aware than I was at their age. So you could, as an educator, I could see this, like, wow, okay, there is a new consciousness, a much more awake consciousness on the planet. So, yeah, so New Earth Consciousness, I thought, oh, that's perfect. That's what it is, you know, and it was the energy work involved working with sacred geometry and intention and co-creating with the earth. And, you know, obviously we, I would say on a mass scale, realize that things aren't working so well. And we know deep in our bones that we've got to get back in alignment with nature and nature's principles if we want to continue to be here on the planet. So our technology needs to come into alignment with the earth. And the other thing that I noticed too is just other people and having experiences that I guess you'd call it like kind of like cross species communication, let's say. Mm-hmm. I've had some experiences where I'm sitting in the garden and I must have been in some kind of meditative state, but this rose was clearly communicating to me, or being in a forest. And I remember being, I think I was 17 at the time, and just driving through northern British Columbia and seeing the clear-cut forests and just feeling the sadness of the forest, like weeping. Another story of a woman, and this one I find really fascinating, a Christian woman who I would say what I notice often in, I guess, the Christian community is not all of it, but at least I grew up thinking that, you know, Christians were kind of like, oh, energy healing is bad, you know, it's not safe and all of that. Well, this woman who was a Christian, she was at a giant sequoia, like in a giant sequoia tree where they had this, what do you call those cable things you glide down? I forget what it's called. Anyway, it was some kind of amusement thing. You grab onto this bar and you fly through the forest on this cable. So she's up in this tree on this platform waiting for her turn. She's getting her helmet on, getting ready to do the ride. And suddenly the tree starts talking to her and basically telling her, I'm so sad that this was done to me. I've been chopped down to be turned into this platform. And she could feel the pain of the tree. To me, I think that's just an awakening of the heart of Christ consciousness. We're realizing that we are intimately connected. I think deep, deep down in our heart of hearts of humanity, we want to feel at home here. And so with New Earth Consciousness, I feel like I'm just in the beginning of this. I started a YouTube channel where I decided, okay, I'm just going to start interviewing other healers and light workers and visionaries and just have it create a platform where people can share. It makes me think of the song, "The Revolution Will Not Be Televised." I forget who, but in the 1960s, right? Like, the revolution will not be televised. And that's true. And we don't get to see the good news on the mainstream. And so, you know, people like yourself and many others that are awake and that are, have a sense that things are changing. And so that's, you know, I don't have it all figured out, but I think most people feel it in their bones of this remembering that when you look at the amount of time that human beings have been on Earth, this little slice that we're in where technology, it's so small. And in our DNA, deep in our bones, as much as maybe there is this kind of old paradigm influence that, that wants to squash it out of us, you know, like wants us to forget, I think what's inside of us is so, so much more powerful that it can't be squelched. That's my feeling.
Well, I think it's not unusual for nature to be talking to us because, I mean, if you look at many of the indigenous cultures, and particularly Native American culture, they believe everything has a spirit, everything is to be revered. We work collaboratively with nature. Trees, rocks, water, everything speaks to us, has its own spirit and energy. We can tap into that to help really find our true authentic selves and also not only work collaboratively with nature and cooperatively with nature, but also get clarity in terms of what our own life path and how that should manifest. So. Yeah, and I think, you know, I just think of New Earth, I think of being grounded, I think of being connected, I think of having roots that are going to be strong, that are going to give me a good foundation for co-creating my own reality in conjunction with the universe. So I think what you're doing to facilitate that is great.
Thank you.
Well, you're welcome.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask you couple of last questions. The first, if there's one thing you want to leave our listeners with today, what would that be?
That would be to, well, the word just unlimited possibilities comes to mind. We are unlimited beings. We are just scratching the surface of what is possible. With science coming together with spirituality, we're just starting to like, oh, it's all the same. Like, it's all coming together. It's all the same thing. Spirit and matter coming together. That our reality is more malleable than we realize. And to experience a big shift in your life, or even to experience a big shift in the collective, it's happening faster and faster. They call it the quickening. So I think that just to remember, it's even though there's moments where it feels like, oh, wow, things are getting really dark, it's in the darkest moments where the greatest amount of light can pour in. And so I feel that this shift that we're going through doesn't have to take, or we don't need to think that, oh, it's going to take hundreds and hundreds of years to get to the other side of this. I think that when we wake up and realize that we're creating our reality, anything is possible. We have free will and choice.
Yep.
It boils down to that.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's all about empowerment. It's also tapping into the fact that we can't buy into society's narrative of limitation. We got to buy into the fact that we have potential to achieve whatever we want to achieve in this world, that there's nothing stopping us. I tell my students, every new class, I tell my students, I don't care what your past history dictates. I don't care if you got a D in another class. I don't care if you're a C average student. I think you're capable of doing great things. I'm going to treat you as if you're capable of doing great things. Now, whether you buy into that is up to you, but I'm going to treat you always as if you have unlimited potential. And if we treat individuals as if they have unlimited potential, they're going to strive to be the best versions of themselves. So I mean, let's tap into our true potential as human beings. And I also love the fact that you talked about the integration of science and spirituality, because that's been my philosophy. An integrative approach is going to help us create more awareness about ourselves, our relationship to the world around us, and is going to help us understand human behavior better than maybe either one of those separately. So I mean, you are preaching literally to the choir on the importance of science and spirituality working in union. And the other thing, it's about belief expansion, not abandoning core beliefs to make room for other beliefs. It's making room for everything and expanding your perspective. And in that way, I think improving your critical thinking skills and also being open to a lot of different possibilities and also a lot of different cultures, a lot of different perspectives when we open ourselves up to belief expansion. So that one thing that you left me and our listeners with kind of resonated with me on a multi-dimensional level. So thank you for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
My last question for you is, if individuals want to get in touch with you, contract with you for your services, find out what you have going on, what's the best way for them to do that, Tanya?
Yeah, so just go to newearthconsciousness.com. You can sign up for my email newsletter. There's a little freebie there, a little meditation you can download. My email newsletters often host free family constellation workshops you can come and participate in and see what that's like, maybe even receive one for yourself. Then I also do interviews just like you do, Dave. Those get emailed out too. I have a YouTube channel, New Earth Consciousness. You can find me in those two places. And I offer free discovery calls to anybody that's curious to learn more about how I could help them.
And all of your contact information will get in the program notes, both when the episode launches on audio and launches on YouTube as well. Tanya, with that, thank you so much for being such a valuable guest contributor today. I truly enjoyed our conversation. I hope we can do this again in the future sometime.
Thank you, Dave, so much.
My pleasure. That is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.